The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Okay, Tov. Yeah, we're still trying to get used to the wind-up to Purim. We might have a lockdown over Purim. We're not quite sure yet. There's still some speculation about what the government may decide. But for some reason, Purim has this link with Pesach. You know that once we pass Purim, we've got like a month until Pesach.
Yeah, basically there, yeah.
Yeah, and Pesach preparations have already begun at the Kotel. It's not quite kashering for Pesach, but it's quite fascinating that the Kotel actually gets a facelift treatment twice a year, once before Pesach and once before Rosh Hashanah, and that's all about preventative maintenance. And I don't know how many people know that every single rock in the wall of the Kotel, in the main outdoor area of the wall of the Kotel, is actually documented. There are notes about every single stone in the wall and the treatment that has been given to that particular stone.
Every single stone?
Every single stone is documented so that they know exactly what it's made of, what the issues are, how it's been treated over the years, and they actually inject filler material into the stones of the Kotel in order to strengthen them, in order to try to maintain them, because obviously they're historical, they've got a bit of history behind them, and they're subject to weather conditions and things like that. So in order to try to ensure the stability of these stones, some of which are 2,000 years old, they go about this maintenance program twice a year. They go up, they inject filler into the stone in order to try and strengthen it. They document everything that they do for every single stone. It's quite a remarkable process.
I had absolutely no idea. That really is incredible. And this starts to happen now, ahead of Pesach.
This starts to happen now ahead of Pesach. I mean, obviously, you know, this is on the basis that Pesach and Rosh Hashanah are generally busy times. And so they try to do it before the onset of the busy time. This year, Pesach, I'm guessing, is going to be slightly less busy. But the maintenance program goes ahead as scheduled nonetheless. And yeah, people are up on these cherry picker kind of lifts, and they're going and examining every single stone, checking for foliage that's grown there, and just making sure that everything is as good as can possibly be in order to hold out for at least another 2,000 years.
All right. And somebody else also holding out at the moment is Prime Minister Netanyahu. I mean, not quite 2,000 years, but if he has his way, it might well be.
It could well be. I mean, yeah, obviously now the court finally did take the elephant out of the room and call it what it is and say, look, we are not going to progress to the evidentiary stage of the trial until after the election. The court acknowledging that it really doesn't want to get involved in the election. And so whereas the election will be held on the 23rd of March, the evidentiary stage where witnesses will begin to be called will begin on the 5th of April. I'm just trying to imagine what that's going to be like, because I know that immediately after the election, we go into this very intensive coalition building period, and I have no doubt that the Prime Minister will be involved with that. And I just wonder whether the court's considered how they are going to somehow manage to keep this trial running against a person who really has quite a busy timetable and who could potentially use the national good as an excuse for somehow continuing to delay this trial. I mean, this is the obvious issue that we have about putting a serving leader on trial, and certainly in some countries, this is something that is not allowed, that they say if there are any, if there's a case to be answered, then the leader will answer that case once he has completed his term in office, and then the case will be brought against him, because trying to progress a legal trial against somebody who's in office is a very, very difficult thing. You stand accused potentially of detracting them from their main job, which is, of course, to run the country, and in our case, to run the country under extremely difficult circumstances. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to see. The other argument, of course, is that even the Prime Minister is presumed innocent until proven guilty, and therefore he has to have his opportunity to have his day in court. And all the time that this hangs over his head, you know, if it was the case that that the trial would have to be postponed until after his term in office, obviously that we never know when that might be. It could still be a number of years away. And there is always this charge, hanging over his head, which is a little, unbecoming of a prime minister, I would say, to have to serve a term in office with a legal charge with some quite serious allegations being made against him. So I'm not exactly sure how this is all going to turn out. Some people would say the right thing to do would be to resign, to face the trial, to prove yourself innocent, and then to potentially return to office once you've gone through that process, except for the fact that this trial is likely to take some time. People are saying 2 to 3 years. But of course, the way that the defense team are working at the moment is to try somehow to discredit the Attorney General, Avichai Mandelblit. And in fact, the court did criticize him for not strictly following procedures in this case. The Netanyahu defense team has a reason to bring him into disrepute because he is the one who ultimately made the decision that Netanyahu has a case to answer. The irony being, of course, that it was Netanyahu who appointed him to his position in the first place. And therein lies obviously some issue of conflict of interest. But the court has said that there were some issues, some problems with the way in which he pursued a procedure on this case that they weren't strictly adhered to, and that he didn't formally file a proper request for the probe of the prime minister. And of course, the Netanyahu defense team is very satisfied that Mandelblit is somehow being criticized. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that Benny Gantz has weighed in by saying that the Blue and White Party has also a role in this, because if it wasn't for their participation in the government, then Mandelblit might have already been fired by now, if it wasn't for Kahol Lavan insisting upon him continuing to serve his term as Attorney General. So lots and lots of issues backwards and forwards, very, very complex legal arguments involved regarding procedure being followed or not followed, as the case may be. But all we know right now is that there will be no evidence brought in this particular trial before the election. The court saying that the last thing that they wish to do is to have a role in influencing or potentially influencing the outcome of the election. Mm-hmm. So it is a formally now postponed until April the 5th.
All right. The U.S. administration appears set to return to the Iran nuclear deal. A number of senior Israeli security experts have supported this position. Where do things stand on the agreement at the moment?
Quite confusing, I think, for me, because the Biden administration seems to have challenged the Iranian regime to simply return back to adhering to the terms of the agreement. And that seems very, very unlikely, particularly when you consider the fact that just yesterday they decided that they were ending the implementation of the so-called additional protocol of the nuclear deal that allows the International Atomic Energy Agency to carry out snap inspections at sites that have not been declared to the agency. Now, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, was in Tehran last week or earlier this week, and he apparently reached a deal with Iran to continue some verification and monitoring activities in the country. But clearly, they already have stepped back from what was agreed in that particular agreement, and they've come to a new understanding with the Iranian regime, which is a much more diluted form of what the original agreement foresaw. So I don't exactly know whether the Biden administration really does intend to try to return to the deal or not, and whether this is not just a tactic. It may well be that they're saying, look, Iran, we would like to return to the deal. If you go back to adhering to your terms, which in brackets, they never really did anyway. But okay, let's assume for the moment that they did. If you go back to adhering to your terms, then we will return to the deal. Now, it seems to me, and I'm guessing that the Biden administration officials also understand this, that Iran seems highly unlikely to return. So maybe this is a tactic for the Biden administration to turn around and say, well, we gave you the opportunity to return to the agreement. You didn't adhere to it. This is our next step. And I don't know what the next step will be. That's going to be the interesting thing, because I just cannot see how Iran will return to this. The thing that's most interesting for me is the fact that these Israeli senior security officials, including a former head of the Mossad, have actually come out and written a letter to the Prime Minister trying to encourage the Prime Minister to support the Biden administration's attempts to return back to the deal. I don't understand that. I mean, there are some very, very well-known names, including former Deputy Chief of Staff Matan Vilnai, and including the former head of the Mossad, Tamir Pardo, and including the former IDF Officer Commanding Operations Directorate, Nitzan Alon. These are people who are considered to be quite senior in the security field, and people who know a lot of secrets that the general public don't know. So, for example, Tamir Pardo, who for me is a highly influential name on that list, a former head of the Mossad, very, very fascinating for me that he's come out trying to encourage the Prime Minister to seek an agreement with Iran rather than not. And I'm guessing that they understand that Iran is not particularly inclined to adhere to any agreement, even if there is one struck, as was the case back in 2015. So for me, there's a lot of confusion about what the reality of the situation is. And I'm not quite sure whether these security officials might feel that the likelihood of Israel being able to carry out a successful attack against the Iranian nuclear facility is so remote that any sort of cooperation is better than none at all. I'm trying to work out exactly what the maybe, logic is, but this is certainly an interesting situation.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because it gives the inspectors and whomever they might be more access to what really is going on in Iran. It gives them a place on the ground. I don't know. It's very, very perplexing, because after being told for years how terrible this is, all of a sudden there's a number of Israeli security officials are saying actually maybe it's a better than the alternative. It just doesn't.
And especially, it seems very strange, and especially when the Ayatollahs are standing up making increasingly strong statements about their intention not to go back to what was in the deal. It seems as if this approach has really emboldened the Iranian regime more than ever before, that now they see that people are trying to pursue them and trying to coax them and to encourage them to go back to what was, even though they never really adhered to it. Now's the time that they're standing up and saying, we're going to do whatever we like, and we don't care what you think or say to us. And that's really the approach that they're taking right now.
Yeah, I'd love your thoughts on this. 34519 or 0618951019. Do you have a theory? What do you think this is really about? Because there's unquestionably more to this than meets the eye. Finally, Anthony, a huge oil spill has taken place off the coast of Israel, causing one of Israel's largest ecological disasters in decades. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tar that's been washed up along Israel's beaches from the north to the south along the Mediterranean coast. And the first hint that we got was last week when a fin whale, a 25-ton fin whale, was washed up on one of Israel's southern beaches. A post-mortem has been carried out on that whale. It seems as if there is evidence of tar inside the lungs of that whale, and the whale's actually been buried just off the beach. The idea apparently is that once the soft tissue has decayed, that they plan actually to excavate the whale, the carcass, again and conduct some further tests on it. I don't know that people even knew that such large whales would be found off the coast of Israel. But the issue with this oil spill is that we had this huge storm last week. Obviously, seas were rough. There was no idea that any oil spill had taken place until well after the fact, and there is now an attempt to try to track down which ship might have been responsible. It seems as if though it was a ship that simply passed by the coast of Israel and didn't potentially even dock here, wasn't even involved in any way in Israel, but simply passed by and let off this massive oil spill as it went past. Might have been damaged in a storm, I don't know. But this is a huge, huge ecological disaster. Turtles have been washed up on the beach, smeared with this tar, the tar has washed up on the beach. There is a hope that we might get our beaches back to some semblance of normality in a way that people can actually go back to swimming in the sea and using the beaches in time for the swimming season, which is due to begin in April. But there is no a guarantee right now that we will even be able to achieve that. So there are hundreds of volunteers, thousands of volunteers who have taken place in an attempt to clean up along the shoreline to try to rescue some of these animals, which have clearly been very, very badly affected by the spill. But this is a very, very major issue along Israel's Mediterranean coast. Fortunately, we understand the desalination plants that operate along that coast have not been affected. Yeah, but unfortunately, the ecology of the situation and the beaches themselves have all been polluted. And this is a very, very serious situation.
It is indeed, and such a sad situation when you see the damage that these spills can do. It takes months to try and get them right again.
Absolutely. And so, you know, people are hoping that at least by the time we get back to our swimming season, we will be able to reclaim our beaches. But at the moment, it's looking quite bleak.
Gosh. So Israel comes out of lockdown, everybody gets vaccinated, and then they can't go to the beach because of an oil spill.
Exactly.
That's uplifting news.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.